Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. I probably will need to cut out that doo-doo-doo because we were waiting for the thing to go live on Google. I'm Russell Burlingame. Here with me today is Zachary Roberts. We're going to be back again later in the week or next week, I guess, talking the end of the year, and we'll try to see if we can get some of our other hosts to come. It's hurting cats, I tell you.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Our first episode was all about Josie and the Pussycats and Star Wars The Force Awakens. And there is no new Josie and the Pussycats movie, and nobody but me has seen Riverdale yet. But there is a new Star Wars movie, which pretty much everybody in the universe has already seen. So seemed like a good time to talk about that a little bit. Yeah. And I guess we'll start. Zach, how did you feel about Rogue One?
I liked it. I don't know if I liked it as much as everybody else liked it. But I mean, that's kind of always been for me, all the Star Wars films, since I turned 13, like I worshiped them as a kid. I had them on beta, had them on VHS, and then, you know, and watched them endlessly, could quote them, but like somewhere in my teens kind of fell out of favor with them. And it had not, it was before the first three came out.
The prequels.
The prequels. Ugh. So it had nothing to do with that. Like I think we probably talk about this all the time. Like, you know, it's like how one film can ruin another film. That can happen, but I usually am pretty good about not allowing, you know, like Indiana Jones 4, which I know we deny its existence. Even though I had a very interesting conversation with a couple other comic book people when I was in Dublin, and they defended four. It was very weird. I was just like, I'm too drunk to really have like a real conversation right now. There's just too much Irish whiskey in me.
Were they big Shia LaBeouf fans or?
No, I was just like, I had a really bad ability to kind of like pull together an argument of why it was bad. It's just one of those things where I'm like a refrigerator, aliens, like he was like, yeah. I'm like, what's going on? Anyway, he's a good person.
I feel like
weird defense of a film that you'd actually be like,
I kind of feel like that's one of those movies that like at this point it's just so generally accepted to be bad.
Yeah,
we're gonna start seeing pushback from people who are just like, no, but it's really a classic.
I'm waiting for the think pieces of all the people who need to, you know how usually they're like in defense of there's at least one for Hudson Hawk, and then there's a rebuttal if I remember correctly. Yeah. There's like, no, Hudson Hawk really was that bad. It's like, seriously, like I don't even think the people defending that film are like.
They have that for Josie and the Pussycats, man. Yes. They have, because there's so many articles on the internet that basically echo our first podcast where it's like, oh, it's this, like, weird, kooky, anti-capitalist, like, you know, underrated masterpiece. Yeah. You have a lot of people, not a lot, but I've seen a couple of people online who, like, take a very hard, like, no, that movie's terrible, because it's all about separating yourself from corporate music, but those girls didn't actually sing. There were musicians who weren't credited because they were singing underneath Rachel Lee Cook. And like straight out, like, you know, proletariat argument that Josie and the Pussycats is actually consumer garbage masquerading as anti-capitalist. And you're just like, oh my God, this is a conversation we're having. God bless the internet.
It's why I miss film school, though. That's the sort of conversation you used to have. Yeah. Like my arguments against why I hated Tim Burton when I was in school, and there was we are so way off topic. We're not even like even touch on topic. I don't even know how I got here. Where am I?
Indiana Jones.
My whole thing, and I think I literally, it was the first thing I said after we left the theater, was I was expecting a darker film. Especially based on the first trailer, which I know that from the first trailer, which I like super excited about. Like, like actually genuinely excited about, even as opposed to when Force Awakens came out, which I was like, eh, I'm excited. Obviously, I'm excited. It looks good.
Yeah, yeah.
It got rid of Jar Jar. It got rid of, you know, it looks like it's going back to it. And I love that film. Like, I watch it all the time still. And this one, I will buy right when it comes out. I'll probably buy the Blu-ray thing or whatever. I mean, but the thing is like people, like so many of my friends too, that usually have the very similar opinion on kind of this type of film. This is better. This is the best one ever. And like, oh, it's so much darker.
Right,
so much
right.
Like, I thought that like, I thought that some of the original, at least parts of the originals, were darker than this. And I'm not even, you know, just the way the feeling, the overall like hopelessness of a lot of the first ones, like this one, it seemed that they were, you know, I mean like, you know, okay. So obviously spoilers, you know,
right.
I always, even though I think we're entering the world with the time where everyone's probably seen it, but still spoilers, obviously, you know, even the point when they're all dying at the end. They're all very smiley. And I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, that end sequence was fantastic. It definitely was the best part of the film. But still, like, I don't know. I mean,
I think part of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think part of that was, and you know, obviously, most obviously with the gay monk. But I think
have we
the
decided
idea
he's
was
gay now? I read something that, like, they were a couple. But he wasn't, they weren't a couple. Like the director was like, you can decide what they are. It's your own thing. And I'm like, do we really have to like throw sexuality on every single goddamn character? Like, not that I want to be this, like this person usually we yell at, but I'm like, no, at this point, like now, like they're Star Wars characters.
The only reason I've decided he's a gay monk is because when he's dying and the other guy like holds his hand or whatever, the way it was shot, I was just like, oh, people are going to get all worked up about this. And sure enough, they did. And so
I'm pretty sure at this point that certain directors who just don't care one way or the other, they specifically shoot things or like in a way that we're like, we're going to make people, this is going to be a whole like 6 month long Reddit thread that people will talk about, and so we'll get buzz for it, and we're just gonna linger 5 more seconds on that hand that the two men are holding, and they're like, oh, they're gay or whatever, and that's the whole literally the reason that why parts of cinema happen now is just to get
to
like
provoke idiots on social media,
I support, I fully and totally support. I would, if there's a way that some way you could be like, well, maybe he's a transgender, bisexual, cis. No, he wouldn't be cis. I don't know. I don't like everything under the sun just to troll the trolls. Solidarity, man. But yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I think it's most obvious with the monk. And here's the thing, outside of Jin and K2SO.
Yeah.
And Krennic, which is the bad guy.
Yeah.
I can't remember anybody's names. Like, you know, they were the Magnificent Seven, you know.
Yeah.
They largely, for me, were defined by their characteristics, not by any kind of actual name or identity.
Yeah.
Which isn't entirely fair, because they're, you know, I've seen a lot of criticisms that there's no characterization in this movie at all, and I don't think that's true. I think that there were Cliff's Notes characterizations to every character.
Yeah.
You know, I think every major character, I can tell you like 3 things about them, you know? So it's not true that there's nothing there. There's something there. It's just shallow. And part of that's because they're creating, you know, 9 new characters for you to follow.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think the reason that you get that vibe that everything's like, everything's happy, even though we're all dying now, is because, I think for one reason or another, they wanted to give you a group that, except for Jin, were like true believers. Yeah. You know, these are people who will happily die for the cause. And so when it comes down to dying for the cause as an actual practical matter, I think that Jin is the only one who really loses anything, because yeah. Jin is the only one who ever had a shot at a normal life. Every other character in this movie, like, this has been everything that consumed them for as long as they've had an identity.
Yeah.
No, which is actually kind of funny.
No, go ahead.
Gary Whitta, the guy who directed the movie, was on Twitter the other day. He was answering a bunch of questions. And a lot of people ask, like, weird, very plotty questions, which I always find kind of boring, but then our site picks them up and runs them as news stories.
Yeah.
And I ran a story that was, like, a very character-y question,
yeah.
which was somebody asked him, essentially, if all of this hadn't happened, would Jin have followed in her father's footsteps and worked for the Empire? And Whitta's response was, well, I think her whole tragedy is that she was never made to be a soldier. Like, her whole tragedy is the fact that she could have been something else, where almost no other character in Star Wars has ever been a person who could have been someone else. Like, when you yeah. think of every major character in this franchise, like, they are built to do this.
Yeah, well, it's not just that they're written or built that way. They are predestined to do that.
Right, yeah.
They are exactly. in that position, in that time and place. I mean, myths and whatever, what is it, Campbell's.
Joseph Campbell, yeah.
Freaking things. It's like, you know, Lucas-wise. This is also, no, I guess it's not. I was about to say, it's like, it's also the first, we have very few characters. This is the first time you introduce a boatload of characters that, Lucas had nothing to do with, really, right? I mean,
they definitely didn't, like, as far as I know, most of these characters didn't exist in the previous, like, expanded universe canon or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I assume that means that Lucas had very little to do with most of them. I do know that there were some of these characters that were, like, I'm under the impression, anyway, I shouldn't say that I know because I'm probably wrong, but I'm under the impression that some of these characters were characters that Lucas had created at some point that are now being picked up and run with, which I know is super common in the Disney era of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, because Lucas keeps that extensive vault and he basically never threw anything away. You know, when I spoke with Dave Filoni, the guy who runs Star Wars Rebels, back before that show started, almost everything on that show, be it like musical cues, character designs, android designs, weapon designs, like all this stuff is like things that he pulled out of Lucas's vault and was just like, oh, we're going to tweak this a little bit. We're going to clean it up and modernize it. And then this is going to be like our character on Star Wars Rebels. And the idea for that was that you're hewing true to the period. In a way that, like, say, the prequels didn't. Like, the prequels, everything was, like, shiny and new and aerodynamic and everything. And it was like, how in the 30 years between when Anakin is on Tatooine and when he becomes Darth Vader, did everything in the world become, or everything in the galaxy become so shitty?
Yeah.
Because it's like, everything got older and broken, and it's not even, like, the same stuff that got older and broken. It's, like, entirely new, less modern looking. Anyway. So, like, Clone Wars and Rebels and I imagine Rogue One have gone out of their way to look at his old notes, steal whatever they can steal, and to ensure that this feels like something that Lucas created at that time, even if it's not something he directly created.
Yeah.
And I don't know about what's his name, Saw, Forrest Whitaker's character. I don't know if he was created by Lucas, but I do know that he appeared on Rebels. He appeared on Clone Wars, which was back in the Lucas era.
That's true.
The pre-Disney era. And then when they were looking for, like, the hardened radical for this movie, they decided they would reach back and find some of the people who fought alongside Anakin in, you know, the Clone Wars, and, like, pick somebody who seemed like maybe he could have been radicalized. And so, like, that dude had lost a couple of, you know, I think he lost his feet in Clone Wars. Maybe I'm wrong. But something terrible. Like, he was constantly getting injured in combat.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, they decided, like, they would make him the anti-Vader. He's, like, this rebel guy who's walking around with a breathing machine and all the fake limbs.
Yeah.
But anyway. But, yeah, I mean, I will say this is the first time since, like, the first, well, not really since the first Star Wars, but it's the first time probably since Phantom Menace that it felt like we had a real data dump. Yeah. Like, there, you know, whatever the flaws of the prequels were, once they established the ground rules of what they were doing in episode one, episodes two and three were very much driven by the plot and driven by the action. You didn't have a lot of stopping to for exposition and, you know, you know, that's why you can get these things like the fan theory that Obi-Wan was secretly having an affair with her for all those years, because like, there's no dialogue to to refute it, because nobody talks about what happened between movies.
Yeah.
This is the first time in, like, since episode one, that I felt like, holy crap, there's just a whole lot of people standing around telling us stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
they did it because I read very little about it or saw anything other than the trailers before I went to see it, kind of, definitely on purpose,
right,
obviously. But, that was a complaint, is that there was a lot of just kind of standing around talking. And I think that they were at least, obviously they were standing around talking, but at least they were like moving places. Like, it's like standing on one of the
yeah,
you know, one of the crafts that they were going somewhere. Yeah. And, you know, which I like it, it's also like, they introduced a lot of kind of background of the Empire that, you know, it's a very, I'm sure Kevin Smith was just giddy the entire time,
yeah, oh,
because
yeah,
of the amount of like the fact that they have slaves, the fact that there's this like work camp, you know, is a huge thing. Like, I really wish, you know, the political science major in me was like, no, we need to spend some time here and like look at this. And, you know, I mean, this is the, you know, that's the, especially yeah, considering this is a film that, yes, Force Awakens, you dealt with more, they're more of a, they're rebellion, but they're not Al Qaeda. They're, you know,
yeah,
I don't know, the
is it, well, I mean,
big splinter group, they're just another bunch of nation states that haven't joined the other one. You know, I mean, they're like, you know, just like,
well, if, and
they're Texas or something
kinda,
like that, you know, it's like, it's not,
that's kind of how it's always been presented when you think about it. Like, you know, per the prequels, they're the government in exile, you
yeah
know?
Yeah.
They're Taiwan. And, yeah, and so like, so they should be expecting a call from Donald Trump anytime now, but, but I mean, you know, per the prequels, they're a government in exile. We didn't really get that sense so much, I don't think, in, you know, Star Wars, which is what everybody now calls New Hope. I still call it Star Wars cause I'm miserable that way. But we didn't really get that sense in Star Wars, I don't think. But by the time Empire came around, I definitely remember having kind of a clear sense that they were, that was their role. They were a government in exile, and that there were essentially two governments, both claiming to be, you know, legitimate.
Yeah.
And I mean, certainly the terminology was all there in the first movie, and maybe I just never really noticed it until after the prequels came out, and so it changed my point of view. But at any rate, yeah, but yeah, you're right. Like, this is the first time we're really seeing, like, it's a very kind of guerrilla insurgency in Rogue One. Like,
yeah,
it's definitely, like, the idea of a rebellion is much more tangible here. And again, I will cop to the fact that I've seen very, very little of Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that is in keeping with what they've already been doing on Rebels, which is distinctly possible because, like, you know, it's a CGI animated show on Disney XD, so it's just really never seemed like it was up my wheelhouse. But whenever I've talked to like the cast and crew at Comic Cons and stuff,
yeah,
they're very serious about this show. And obviously they've had like Carrie Fisher on to play Leia, and they've had James Earl Jones on to play Vader. So like, obviously what they're doing on that show matters to these movies on the level of like, if you're the kind of person who needs to know every little thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not, because like you, I really like, I enjoy Star Wars, but it's never been my like obsession.
Yeah.
It's like, I think when I was 3 or 4, it was, but you know, that was like me playing with a toy Rancor monster and yeah, watching it on video disc, which by the way,
you had to beat me with the video, with the esoteric format, not beta, but video disc.
Well, remember, my family didn't have much money, so like that was our thing. We like my dad, after the video discs were discontinued, he would like buy huge bulks of them.
Yes, I remember distinctly, ever... the piles.
Yeah, actually, if you had ever seen my house in Phoenix before we started like hanging out and before we knew each other, he actually, when he bought out this one store, they just like put the shelf on the like on the back of a pickup truck and drove it to my house. And so like for the longest time, there was a like a straight up CED rack in my living room. And at one time, there was some guy who was on drugs broke in thinking that it was his ex-girlfriend's house. And my parents had been fighting, and so my mom was sleeping like on the couch or something. And this dude just walks up to her and starts calling her Jennifer and talking to her. And she picked up like a giant stack of video discs and threw it at him. And like that's how she got rid of it.
Like that could kill a man.
Yeah, pretty much.
For our younger audience, and for still even not our younger audience, like people who just that was the format. It was like mini discs. It like was there and then it was gone.
Yeah.
What? It was a format that I knew about in theory before I met you, but had never actually seen. They're record size, like if you think of like a record, maybe even a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know, maybe like the thickness like, of an iPhone now, maybe thicker than that.
A little bit thinner than that, I think, because they're like, you know, they're like maybe an eighth to a sixth of an inch in depth. And what it was there's a square plastic case, and at the end of the case there's like these teeth that get squeezed in, and like a platter that sticks inside of the case. So when you put it into your when you slide it into the player, you'll hear it click, and then you remove the case, and the actual content will stay inside. Yeah. And then halfway through the movie, you have to flip the disc over and do that over again and reinsert it. And I actually, it's weird, like outside of my house, I don't think I knew anybody except for like my grandparents who owned these things. And probably my grandparents, if I asked them, only had it because my dad was so committed to the format. I remember them being used in like elementary and middle school. Maybe not middle even, probably just elementary. Yeah. But like I remember being like, you know, a young kid, and like when I was a teenager and in my early 20s and when we worked at the video store, like I would talk about video discs with people, and like a common response that I would get was, are those things we used to use in school that you had to flip over halfway through? Like, yeah. but yeah, I actually somewhere in, I mean, it doesn't exist anymore. But at some point in my life, and God knows where it is now, I had the Star Wars video disc, which I remember was like a purplish blue. The actual case, which they were usually white, it was like a purplish blue color. And so it was one of those things. It was easy to find a Star Wars movie because there's only like maybe 5 to 10% of them that were anything other than white. So if you saw like the blue one or the red one, you knew exactly what that movie was.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had at one point the Star Wars video disc signed by Kenny Baker, the guy who plays R2-D2.
Oh wow.
And this was like when I was a teenager, so at that point they weren't, you know, charging $20 a signature like they do now.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those wacky things where you're just like, yeah, I'm sure probably if you search that on eBay, I'm sure somebody is selling, because it's Star Wars, those video discs for some totally unreasonable sum of money. Because after all, that's an early home video release, and so therefore it's unaltered by the whim of George Lucas. But I don't remember how we got into video discs.
Something about Rogue One. Yeah. Oh, actually, they're not too bad. It's only $12.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I remembered what my point was with the video discs.
Yes.
And it's actually super germane. It's not even esoteric at all. I mean, the rant was, but
yeah.
You probably didn't get the same thing that I did because you didn't have them in proximity to you so much. But when that data tape is being extracted by the like automatic hand.
Yeah.
the motion, the sound, it was a video disc. Like, that's what that, it was that, like, the click and the shh.
Oh, like, during
literally, when you pulled.
Yeah. You mean during the film? Yeah,
in the third act.
Yeah. When they were taking the plans for which I think I actually leaned over and I was like, this is the most ridiculous data system you could possibly have.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, it was like, I was expecting at least when they're like going to look for the plans and they're like, well, we have to go to this physical location. And I know the technology is like super weird. It's, you know, it's Blade Runner. It's the weird sci-fi. Well, everything's kind of data, you know, it's like, it's kind of modern, but it's also like some weird twist on what we would have had during the 70s or something.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Spaceships, but for some reason we can't figure out the internet. Like, which, okay. I thought when they were going there and I'm like, oh, well, they're physically going to get some plans. Like they're going to, like, there's going to be a thing. Cause they don't really talk about like what the format is or whatever, which is why when they get there and there's like this, what are those machines?
It's like a claw machine.
Yeah, exactly. There's this like weird claw machine that they can't even, it's not even like punch in the number, like, oh, A14, like a fucking vending machine. It's they literally physically have to go up. The thing lights up. They have to go up. It's one of those like, did they like create this whole setup? No,
they don't have to physically go up until.
Oh, no, no. I mean, remember, no, I mean the machine.
Oh, the machine. Yeah, yeah.
Physically do it. It's not like they punch it in and then the automated system goes, you know, then gets it. No, they with like two levers and it seems moderately complicated because Diego Luna or Cassian is like trying to figure it out. Like it seems to be problematic.
Yeah.
But I just thought that they were going to go get like physical plans. Cause I was like, wait, can't they, you know, I was kind of surprised that they couldn't, you know, hack something. You know, I mean, I know it's, but it seems like that would have saved them. Obviously, you know, they wouldn't have had to go through the shield and do all this whole thing. Which, by the way, Spaceballs.
Oh yes,
like
oh,
Spaceballs. Yeah. Like there's this. So there's this again. If you haven't watched the film and you're still listening to this, which is
and you're,
you know,
for some reason listening to us, yeah.
Which if you're listening to us, I'm kind of surprised anyway, but especially this far in after a rant, after a 10 minute rant on Indiana Jones and video discs and
I had Indiana Jones on video disc.
But there's this thing that there's a protective shield around force field around the planet so they can't get in. Is it around the whole planet or just like a bubble? I think it was around the whole planet, right?
No, it was definitely around the whole planet because if there was a back door in, they would have.
Oh no, I mean it wasn't a dome like.
Oh no. No, it was definitely it was like a bubble, and there was one access point. Basically, if you've seen DC Comics, the Time Sphere that Booster Gold and Rip Hunter move around in. It's basically a glass sphere, and there's one door, and the door, depending on who draws it, is either square or round. In this case, let's say for the sake of argument, the door is round, and that's basically what you're looking at.
Yeah,
with a planet inside instead.
Or if you saw Spaceballs, the thing that they suck the air out of.
Yeah, from the planet. Absolutely. Literally, it really is like it's got the big ring of like city-sized mechanisms that are protecting it so that people can't hack it or whatever.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's like when it slides open and shut, it slides open and shut the same way that the Spaceballs one does.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm literally like, has anyone else made this connection? literally someone wrote, maybe they're just saying Rogue One, A Star Wars Story is utter Spaceballs. Which again, like the helmets. I know that the helmets already existed, but like the helmets, like they all had those big black helmets on, which again seemed to be completely and totally pointless. Yeah. Which I know, I get there's a lot of things. Which, by the way, the one thing is we've really had our first. I'm trying to think of like how many characters we've had that haven't had a gun or a lightsaber, that literally he had just a staff.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think had, I didn't notice had anything special going on with it. It seemed to be just a moderately weighted staff of
It
some
was like,
kind.
well, it had that thing where it could like, I think there was some kind of like mechanic to it where it could like break out into like a three section staff.
Yeah,
know.
Yeah.
You're right.
Didn't have,
it, like, didn't.
So.
Yeah, it didn't have.
So okay, so for some reason armor
blind
that's,
monk.
No, but no, I'm saying the armor that stormtroopers wear don't protect against laser shots or whatever. They don't protect against lightsabers. And now we've discovered they don't protect against wooden staffs. So what?
Yeah.
What exactly is the point of this? Like,
that's a good question.
Because I feel like they're just wearing this like crap on their thing. Although we did see a couple, because now stormtroopers are starting in the last two films to get personalities and like they have more than just, you know, oh, they're
right.
That stormtrooper, which maybe they had kind of numbers all, I'm sure that they had numbers and people attached names to them and that somewhere in a script they were named that. But now they have like, they actually get talked to because they're human beings. They're not clones in this one. Right. Like,
right. As far as I know.
Which goes to a point that think about that when we talk about, when we like get back on the whole, the fact that they're terrorists, the fact that these guys are essentially the Al-Qaeda of the empire. Not to, you know, not any intention. I'm just saying like, you know, their tactics and everything like that. But so we literally have, you know, there's no, absolutely no point for them to wear these things, which I know has always been like the big joke, or the half of the big joke. They couldn't hit anything. And then also, you know, but
well,
it's kind of fascinating.
It's actually one of those things where that, if you think about it, there's already precedent for that going all the way back to like the earliest bits of the first movie, though.
Yeah.
Cause like Chewbacca, who had no weapon,
yeah,
was able to just like knock a bunch of them out.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here going like, okay, if I grab you and slam your heads together, it shouldn't
Ewoks,
knock you out.
The Ewoks, basically everything. That's actually the precedent. Yeah. They could just throw a rock at them or something like that. And yeah, I feel like though that
so
at least was maybe a little bit more aggressive, but I mean,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, that led to humor and like, you know, I'm happy somebody made the point and it's like, thank goodness they brought back another martial arts person because the, you know, the only kind of saving grace of the entire prequels was Darth Maul. Like that was really, he was the only kind of interesting addition to the entire world, and now we have a guy who's basically has the same exact thing. He's got a double, you know, a staff, which, you know, had a lightsaber with two ends before and everything like that. So I mean that sadly, he's sadly, everyone's dead, but you know. so
but
which by the way,
it's funny.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, what were you gonna,
I was saying,
I'm just gonna make fun of.
Yeah, make the point, because I my point brings us to a different topic, so.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to, one of the things about the, like, everybody being dead, I knew that going in, because the New York Times was trying to be super cutesy about, like, because they'd been asked to protect the spoiler that everybody dies, and, you know, when you go to press screenings, generally part of the condition of going and seeing the movie early and possibly getting access to talent and things is that you don't like that there are conditions attached to that screening that might not be attached to, you know, if you just go to a midnight screening at your theater.
Yeah.
And so I guess the New York Times must have resented it because they were like being super cutesy about it. Like, and in their story, they said something like, and then at the end of the movie, you know, you're going to see where these people are and why it mattered or some, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And like the way they phrased it, obviously what it was talking about was that they were on board Leia's ship in the last shot.
Yeah.
But what I thought they were talking about, like the place my brain immediately went was, I'm like, okay, so we've seen that most of the thing happens on this one planet. Are they going to get stuck on like Alderaan? And then like, we just know that they're all screwed because like the planet's going to get blown up in the next movie.
Yeah. I think I actually like that better, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I think so too. That I like, it's just one of those, like, but again, I think the problem with that becomes, unless you see them die, essentially, then somebody down the road is going to get the clever idea that, like, somehow with seconds to go, they got off Alderaan and, you know,
well, I'm still shocked because literally the way that they were setting up the shot, and maybe they did this on purpose. Mm-hmm. The final shot when, Cassian and, Jin.
Mm-hmm.
Jin are sitting there like on the beach, I think.
Yeah.
We're sitting there and the explosion is slowly coming at them. And there's more than enough space that I'm waiting for the like kind of the big, you know, the John Williams lift of John Williams, right?
Yeah.
John Williams like and then some like, I don't know, the Millennium Falcon to come down and like pick them up and like fly out or something like that. But no, I was surprised that they didn't do it. But my thing is that I found it interesting why, and obviously plot wise they had to do this on both times that the the Death Star shot its laser. Are we talking about laser? Did the shot. They put it off to the side for some reason. They didn't, you know, I mean, usually you think every film ever that has like something in the sky that's shooting downward, like you have Independence Day, they hover over the building that they're going to shoot. And then they go to the center, Empire State Building, the White House, the whatever. Then they shoot down and it explodes outward. For both of the major places, they shot it like somewhere else. And like that was shot into the water for some reason. Like, why didn't they? Is there some aiming? Because this wasn't, you know, the laser. Are we talking about it as a laser? I don't know what I forget what the description is. But anyway, Death Star is shooting. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
I know that the bit like the explanation that Widow was giving when people were asking about like, you know, why did it do this and why did it. He always just kind of defaulted back to like, well, it's a single reactor shot. It's really designed to be used to kill planets.
Yeah.
And so the single reactor shot is basically like you're not using the weapon properly.
Yeah.
And so the idea that you want to like blow up a city instead of the planet. Yeah.
That they didn't do the planet blow up on either one, right? I mean that this wasn't
implied. No, they didn't. I think.
Yeah.
I think it was because they make reference in A New Hope to Alderaan being the first time they do it.
Yeah.
Like, I think when Vader is gloating to Leia in A New Hope, he says something about how, like, well, you've given us a perfect test perfect test planet for our weapon or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I think that you couldn't actually go full Death Star.
Yeah. No, I'm just so kind of surprised because they didn't, at least I don't distinctly remember them. And this is kind of nitpicking. It's, you know, whatever it's a test. So they were like, oh, use it at 25%, but they never said like, to me, that's the line, you know, that's the, oh, we'll just throw in a line in there that says, oh, just put it at 25% and we'll just got to take out this city and see what it does. Like, oh, that's, or then bragging and be like, oh, and that's only 25% of the power or something like that. Yeah. It was one of those weird things. Cause they also, again, like I said, didn't direct, it was like, why aren't we hitting the city? And obviously again, that's the way you have to have the chase scene and everything like that. And that's the only way you can have the slow ending. But it's just one of those curious things that.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember whether, I think in the first one they targeted the temple.
Yeah.
And so I think that one hit its target. Yeah. And then like everybody had already left the temple by then because that's where the first skirmish with the stormtroopers happened in the tank.
Yeah. Okay. And the city was taken.
I think you're right. I think for some reason they shot it into the water on the second one and I'm not sure why they would have done that. But I do think that in the first one it wasn't near our heroes, but our heroes weren't the target.
Yeah.
Like, they blew up that temple because that was, like, they had mined it of all the Kyber crystal, and there was nothing there of value to the Empire anymore. And so they wanted to demoralize the rebels by getting rid of the Jedi Temple.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's like, that explains the first one. I don't know what explains the second one. Cause as far as I know, like, I think that they were, they might've been targeting the airstrip. Like they might've been targeting their own base. Because that's where the rebels flew into.
I don't know. I mean, whatever. Yeah. It's just one of those. It's like it's such a weird thing, but you know, whatever.
I also think that the editing I think that the editing in the third act, like the reworking that they did to punch up the ending.
Yeah.
You can see some of that in the fact that I don't understand the geography of that planet at all.
Yeah.
Like,
when
they land and you see the map.
Yeah.
You're like, holy shit, this is like a 3 days journey to the tower so that you can go do this. And then like, they're just there a minute later.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, like how did they get through this whole city and this whole rebel or this whole empire occupied territory without any question? Like there was no fighting along the way. There's no, you know, and I feel like, you know, just because of some context clues and some of the, like, the stuff from the trailers that didn't make it into the movie, I feel like there was a different story there that didn't happen anymore. And it probably, like, that element of it might have made more, like, where they fired might have made more sense if you, like, if that map that we saw was more accurate to what was going on screen.
Yeah.
like, because the way it looked to me was it looked like there were essentially, like, three peninsulas, kind of like the opposite of the Finger Lakes.
Yeah.
Like, three, like, branches out into the water. And then, like, they were on this one, and they had to, like, get either all the way down and through the city or go over the three to get to the third one.
Yeah.
And so if that were the case, and then they bombed where Rogue One landed, then it would still blow the wave of destruction through the water and past the beach because, you know. But, I mean, yeah, it's again, like, it's kind of like what we were talking about with Force Awakens. A lot of what we're talking here is, like, very nitpicky because there were some plot issues and there was some weak characterization. But overall, the movie's very well made.
Yeah, considerably, yeah.
Like, when we're talking about this, it's like we're getting into a lot of – and then one of the things I wanted – this is the thing that I turned around and said to you in the theater just because it amuses me. It's like we're sitting here and we're talking about all of these like nitpicky little things where we're like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And like in a quiet way, this movie, you know, quote unquote, fixed like the biggest one of those in Star Wars history.
Yeah.
Because ever since 1977, people have been like, why the fuck would there be that vent makes no sense. Why is it there?
Yeah.
and like, it was never meant to be a serious criticism. It's like, it's the thing that you say because it's like the Eagles in the Lord of the Rings and, you know, like there's every now and again, there's just one of those criticisms where you're just like, you can take it seriously. And yeah, there's like, there's no good answer, but like, it's not really meant to be taken seriously because it's a joke criticism. It's not actually a weakness of the film.
Yeah.
But as a result of Rogue One, we now know why that vent was there and why Luke Skywalker was able to destroy the Death Star. Like literally it was a designed in flaw.
Yeah.
Basically by an irate engineer who was being listened to.
Yeah.
So it's this great thing where you're just like, okay, I doff my cap at Gary Whitta for deciding that he's going to create a major plot point around like an internet joke.
Yeah. I'm still waiting. I'm waiting for the next film where they do an entire thing on talking about all of the, just daily laborers that worked on the Death Star and like dealing with the Empire having to pay out like pensions and stuff like that to their families after they die. Like just, that would be fantastic. Just like an administrative, they already did that. They did that, the 2 hour long, I forget which one of the prequels it was where they're like, and Senate ruling 7-4-42 for like 45 minutes. And you're like, this is going on still. Like, and it's still like a 2 hour, it was still like a 2 hour and 15 minute long film. And it's not like, well, they're just doing filler here. Right. Like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
Which is, by the way, like, so anyway, let's not go up completely off track as I do that. But like, I really genuinely love the way that they portrayed, bless you, the rebellion, like a rebellion in this film. Yeah. And it's, and not just a rebellion, but like kind of the lengths at which people have gone, like the fact, like the first three films that came out, the original trilogy. Like it's, it, you know, in most of these films, especially sci-fi kind of films, there's this really big kind of glossing over of what one needs to do for rebellions and revolutions and stuff like that. And I think that, you know, like as a person who's, you know, used to be a poli-sci major, have hung out with my fair share of, you know, revolutionaries and socialists and stuff like that, you know, college revolutionaries and college socialists and stuff like that. And that like, they think that there's this massive, you know, there's this sexiness to it. And honestly, usually the only people who are really honest about it are the Stalinists, who I've had threaten my life because I'm a journalist before. Yeah. So they'd be like, oh, in my world, if we won the revolution, you'd be dead. And I'm like, oh, well, that's good. But I like the fact that they actually kind of dealt with that issues. I mean, a friend of mine who's an excellent journalist, Arun Gupta, wrote on his Facebook page, at the end of Rogue One, when the audiences are cheering and clapping, think about how the heroic rebels were all on a gigantic suicide mission with bombs. I will leave it to others to point out that the rebels didn't care a whit about the imperial working class stiffs. No wonder Darth had so much support for Mega, as in make the Empire great again. Which again, he's saying this in tongue in cheek, by the way, like he's not uber serious about the working class stiffs of the, you know, like, but
That said, that's become like this weird right wing meme now because they, but the thing I will say though about you saying that you want to see in one of these movies where they discuss that, I can't find it at the moment on YouTube. I'll see if it's in my, like the bonus features that I have in my digital copy of the prequels. I want to say it's in episode one. One of the there's like a, it's not on the commentary track. It's in like interviews.
Yeah.
They're like sitting in a theater watching episode one for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, cast and crew and whatever. And like, there's a beat where George Lucas is like talking to some random person about Kevin Smith, like where George Lucas is talking about Jay and Silent, he doesn't know Kevin Smith's name, he calls him Jay and Silent Bob, but where he's talking about Jay and Silent Bob and the Death Star contractors.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what he says, but it's just one of those things where you're just like, oh my god, George Lucas is like talking about his Clark's thing, like on an officially released Star Wars DVD, like
that's awesome.
So it's never happened on screen, but it definitely is on one of those DVDs, and you're just like, okay, well, that pretty much is. Like, I guarantee Kevin Smith saw that the first time, and he's like, what the fuck?
Probably hyperventilated for a little bit. And oh, bear. Yeah, it's interesting because it's starting to, again, you know, I mean, one of the things the last that Force Awakens did was it added some humanity to the stormtroopers, that they're not, not only now are we seeing like a whole swath of different types of stormtroopers, and they're not just guys in white helmets, which is anyway.
Right.
Sorry, just the Syrian argument right now going on.
Yeah.
But they're not just guys in the, you know, the white armor and everything like that. And they're not even like, they're not even clones. They're not, they all have personalities. Mm-hmm. They're all human beings. And as we've discovered, some of them are just basically orphans that, you know, were pushed into the rebellion or stolen from homes or whatever, which obviously, you know, has its own interesting kind of, you know, who is the rebellion in this, you know, who is it Empire that really is actually kind of the evil, the Empire, is this, you know, the Lord's Resistance Army from, you know, in Kako, like, and that they're running the place, except they've succeeded, or is this like, or it, you know, were they, you know, Stalin in 1950, you know? So it's interesting because, you know, it's like they're killing them, and you're starting to hear different voices, and you're starting to hear more personalities, I think, coming from the stormtroopers,
mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, you're also seeing, at least now, obviously this is, you know, before it gets, you know, a little bit dark, you know, more of the, just the Darth Vader kind of storyline. But you're also really starting to, I really enjoyed, I thought it's disappointing, obviously, that he's dead. Like everybody, I mean, everybody in the film as well is also, like, the actors are fantastic.
Yeah.
But Ben Mendelsohn, Krennic, I thought was fantastic the way that you actually had kind of the administrative, this guy's trying to, he makes sure that he gets credit mm-hmm. for this. Like, you know, you don't really ever see that. You know, you didn't see that in any of the previous ones of, like, you know, just some guy who's trying to make his up. He had his own cape. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very clearly trying to suck up to Vader. No, it gives him, there's like a weird kind of sadness to him that you, I don't know if you feel for him per se, but you definitely,
I know what you're saying. And it's a through line that runs through the whole film, if you really think about it, because, like, he's this dude who got promoted to beyond his level of expertise and found himself in this position where he was just screwed.
Yeah.
And, like, really, that's why the whole movie happens. That's because he got to the, like, he basically got promoted on the back of his friend's work. And then when his friend deserted, it was like, I'm going to get killed. Because I can't reproduce this work without him. So now I have to make my friend the bad guy and we have to go chase him because that's the way that I get promoted instead of killed.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
And so it's this weird through line that you can draw through his whole career of, like, he probably should have been, like, middle management.
Yeah.
But he got, like, way too much, like, power and authority at this young age when he didn't know what the hell to do.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, it just became trying not to crash the bus for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Like,
but he also, but I mean, I think he also had this, like, really big ambition. It wasn't just trying to, you know, keep above water. It was the fact that he, like, dared to make sure to mention to Darth Vader. You know, I mean, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
To me, you know? That's a very, very ballsy statement in a certain person who has definitely desperation. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, worst case scenario is that the other guy gets the credit and gets to take over the Death Star management. And then he just ends up being a cog, you know, like a lower thing. It's not like Darth is going to, like, throw him into space or some shit like that. It's just, he's just going to be middle management back again. So it's kind of, I like the fact that, like, the characters, you know, I mean, like, you could actually see almost every character that gets more than 1 minute of speaking time in this film kind of have their own, like, I wouldn't mind seeing a split off film of almost any of these characters. Like, I still would love to see, I would love to see, and I'm sure that they won't do it, unfortunately, but, you know, I'd love to see Cassian's, like, actual storyline. Like, to me, I know there's always these like, fake news stories about, oh, Netflix signs a deal with, you know, Marvel to do a Star Wars thing, which, you know, I'd actually love. And to me, this would be the great, you know. Like, it's too bad that we just meet Jyn, like, she gets in with the rebels at the start of this film, and clearly there's no time gaps. I mean, like, this whole film is, like, what has got to be, like, tops a week or something like that. So, well, other than the opening, which, and then the flash, but once you get past the opening credits, and everybody gets together, then it's that, I'd love to see, like, the, you know, the rebellion, you know, just the daily kind of trog of fighting it. Yeah. You know, it's almost like I would love to see, like, again, this is very Firefly. Which I don't think that there's any coincidences or they meant to do that.
No.
But obviously it's a bunch of people on a ship that are former, whatever. But, and, you know, it's like where I would almost rather, see with Firefly, if they ever did a new show of any kind, I'd rather almost see them fighting the rebellion, beforehand. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is something I would love to see. you know, Diego, and, you know, I mean, the fact that, well, Alan Tudyk, of course, I always forget as the voice of...
Yeah, is in Firefly.
Yeah. And he has a second season of Con Men on Vimeo right now, by the way.
That's true.
Yeah.
But what I will say, and again, like, I haven't seen this to know whether it's good or not, but Star Wars Rebels, like, that is literally what you're talking about. Like, yeah. There's it's animated, but, like, it literally, like, it follows the crew of a ship, and it's not, like, the most important ship. It's just, like, a ship in the Rebellion. And it's, like, basically, it's basically a TV show that follows the Millennium Falcon if it weren't the Millennium Falcon, if it were just, like, a ragtag group of people thrown together for the cause. So, and certainly there's a possibility because of the location of Rebels in the timeline, it's distinctly possible that we could see some of these characters show up on that show. I mean, again, they already announced that Saw Gerrera is going to be on the show, Forrest Whitaker's character.
Yeah.
And it's going to kind of fill in some of the gaps between his time in the Clone Wars fighting alongside Anakin and his time as a zealot fighting, like, the Holy War against Anakin.
Yeah.
My understanding is that Rebels, like, takes place basically 3 years before Rogue One.
Yeah, it seems that some of it's now, I guess now it's lining up potentially with the same timeline, with the same time specifically. This is what I'm reading on a couple different things. That
it wouldn't surprise me. I mean,
because they mention a handful of characters, or at least one one character in Rogue One that is just in Rebels alone. So that's interesting.
But, yeah, the general, you mean? I know there was a thing where there's a character who disappeared.
Yeah, General, someone pages General Syndulla over the intercom.
Yeah.
Yeah,
apparently her deal is that she is missing, presumed dead right now on the TV show.
Yeah.
And so that was a big thing for fans of the show because, like, the implication that she becomes General, which she was not at the time of her disappearance / death, means that she survives.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. But or else they just don't know yet, and it's like, oh
no, no, they
no. No, I'm just saying, like, the people on the ship didn't know.
Well, apparently she has a father who was also a soldier. I don't know. There's like a male with Syndulla, and so somebody asked Witta on Twitter yesterday, like, does this mean that she's going to eventually be a general, or is it somebody else in her life that, you know, her husband or dad or whatever. And Widow's like, oh, no, that's her.
Oh.
And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, the way that I read the story, I took it to mean that she was missing, presumed dead or something. It's possible that the whole still alive thing that everybody was getting excited about was literally just that she's still alive and that they don't go Rogue One on the cast of the TV show between now and then. Like, it's possible that, like, it's not this person who they were excited. It's that, like, hey, there's a character from our show that's not dead yet.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, you might check that out. I don't know how good it is. I know Lucas, our Star Wars guy at the website, like, swears by it, but he's a Star Wars guy. And so I don't know, like, I never know to what extent that stuff is, like, continuity porn that you can only not that you can only enjoy if you're really into it, but that, like, is inherently better if you're a big time fan, you know.
Yeah.
Like say Batman v Superman for me, like, there were a lot of little things. Like, there were so many Easter eggs and there were so many little, like, winks and nods and shit that, like, I found a lot of stuff to love in that movie that other people didn't, like, glom onto at all because it just wasn't their thing.
Yeah.
You know.
So shall we end with the ending of the film and discuss the I don't know if it's controversial or not, the shot of Princess Leia at the end that I've heard both things, that it was used footage or that it was CG. And I'm definitely leaning towards CG from
short Leia shot. Leia and what's his name? Peter Cushing's character.
No, I'm
I keep wanting to say Count Dooku. That's not right at all. That's Christopher Lee. Wow. Yeah. Tarkin, Grand Moff Tarkin.
Oh yeah.
Both Princess Leia and Grand Moff Tarkin were CG creations. The girl who plays, like the person who was the physical body of Leia,
yeah,
is like a New Zealand actress who's done basically nothing particularly of note. I followed her on Twitter, so I should be able to find her right now. But apparently, I've done a whole lot of stuff since then, so I don't see her.
Ingveld Dila or Dila. Yeah,
exactly. And so like she I was seeing, I watched a thing on Twitter earlier about how she essentially was brought in because she had a similar body type and face shape to Leia.
Yeah.
And same thing with the actor who's like a British soap opera actor who came in to be Peter Cushing. And it's basically that they found somebody with a similar shape. And in the case of Dela, she did not even deliver the line. That was Carrie Fisher delivered the line.
Yeah.
Because there was only one line, and so why not? Yeah. But in the case of Tarkin, it was all, you know, obviously this new actor who was delivering the lines.
Wow. But, yeah, I mean, his CG, like, that was one of my first things, and, like, I was watching it, and I thought he was dead. And I thought that the actor had died, and then I'm, like, trying to figure out, wait, how did they do it? Because I did not even think that that was CG. But...
See, because I knew going in, I think I, like... Because I knew going in, I think it changed my perception. Because it was very uncanny valley for me. Like, it really, like, I felt the whole time like he was a little video gamey.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear you say that, because like I had the opposite reaction. I very much was aware the whole time he was on screen. Of, you know, but I mean, it was a really interesting process. It's basically the same thing they did for Robert Downey Jr. in Civil War.
Yeah.
Where they take somebody with the same facial structure, and then they like map everything, and then they overlay like digital recreations of that, the previous person. And there's like a whole thing with Tarkin, because apparently Peter Cushing, refused to wear the jack boots.
Yeah. They hurt his feet. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, when they were doing the digital recreation of him so that he could walk around and do the stuff in the movie, they didn't have any shots of him.
Below the knee, basically.
Like, you know, below the knee.
Yeah.
And so it was this weird thing of like, they had to like, they apparently bought a bunch of other Peter Cushing movies and like mapped, because he used to do like a bunch of horror movies earlier in his career.
Yeah.
And so they bought and mapped, like, he was in some like swashbuckler movie. And so he had similar boots and a similar kind of, and they just like, were like, okay, well, yeah, we're just going to rent this movie and use it to like map out our character.
That's amazing.
But yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting kind of process, and I'll try to see if I can find the YouTube video I was watching about it. But they haven't officially, like, I assume they're holding on to this stuff for the bonus features on the Blu-ray, because like, the guy who was explaining it all in this video was like, yeah, I have a source close to the production, and here's what I'm hearing.
Oh.
And so I assume that it's true, because it all sounds very true.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously like they got the likeness rights and all that kind of stuff. I had heard from, I read a story that, Cushing apparently didn't have any immediate family, but this woman who'd been like his assistant or something for the last 15 years of his life inherited his estate, and she's the one who gave them permission to use his likeness. And she, when she went to see the film for the first time, apparently had to like walk out and compose herself, because it was so lifelike that she was totally put off by seeing this person who meant so much to her for so long, like brought back to the dead.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, it definitely, like, they were both CG. I thought that, Leia was definitely, like, very, like, again, very video gamey. Like, and part of that was probably just lighting. I mean, the fact that she has pale skin and a white outfit, and the ship they were on was all white light, and it was like there's no hiding anything.
Yeah,
like it's not like fucking weird. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The camera was like right there too, which I was really surprised because
I'm
like, wait, did they like take the footage and then it was just like too, like they took old footage and then tried to like remaster it too much, or you know, and the fact that it just was too, like it kind of killed that scene for me, and the fact that like they had to do that, like I almost would have rather just. Because they go in the room and then you see behind her and then they cut to the front of her. And like I almost wish that they would have just kind of like had the camera like look in the door and had her like talk or something like that, you know.
There's no
right on shot. It's like
there's no winning with stuff like that, unfortunately. This is the thing we learned on Supergirl all last season, when Superman was like a shadowy figure that swooped in and out a handful of times.
Yeah.
People just whined nonstop. It's like, well, if you're going to use him, you should cast somebody and do a whole episode with him. And it's just like, yeah, but that's not what the script called for. And like, you don't want to spend, like, casting Superman's a big deal. And like, you don't want to, you know, blah, blah, blah. and so, like, I think part of the problem is probably that they want to be open to the idea of a Princess Leia spinoff down the line.
Yeah.
And so I doubt that they wanted to cast a real actor. To deliver one line.
Yeah.
Because either A, you would then have three actors playing Leia, or B, you would blow a casting note, which would potentially be a big piece of news that you can eat your lunch on for a week, for a cameo at the end of Rogue One. Yeah. You know? And so, like, I don't know. I agree with you on principle that, like, I would have preferred it if they shot her from behind and just didn't, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that the problem lies in the fact that there's no, if you're going to have her in the movie, there's no good answer.
Yeah,
because if you shoot her from behind and you don't show her face, people are going to have a temper tantrum about that, you know?
Yeah.
and I mean, it was a little jarring because it was so clearly CG. It was jarring. It wasn't the worst thing, and especially because, like I said, for me, being aware of the Cushing thing the whole time, I saw, like, he seemed more kind of CGE to me, so I guess, like, that extra step of, like, Leia being very obviously CG maybe didn't bother me as much as it did you, because, like, the whole movie, you had a character with 20 minutes of screen time who, you know, But yeah, again, I mean, overall, I enjoyed it. I don't think that it's going to be one of the ones that, you know, when 20 years from now, when we have 27 Star Wars movies, I don't think this is going to be one of the ones that everybody looks back on and says that was totally indispensable. And I'm so glad that, you know, I think that this movie will do fine. I think that it's a good enough movie, and that, like, for a while, I think there will be a lot of people who have a lot of excitement for it, but I think that it probably won't age very well. It'll be interesting to see how people respond once they've actually seen more of the standalone movies. I think that part of the enthusiasm for this, aside from just being tonally different and not having any lightsabers and blah, 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 I think part of the enthusiasm for the movie comes from the fact that this is the beginning of something new. Like, this is the first time, you know, this is the first time that we had a movie that did not center on a Skywalker, you know, that we had like 4 minutes of Darth Vader in the entire movie. And that was the only like tether to that family. I mean, we had Bail Organa for a couple of minutes. We had Leia for a couple of minutes or for a minute.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of enthusiasm for the fact that this is something new in the Star Wars universe. I wonder, once that idea isn't new anymore, how excited people will still be about it.
Yeah. I mean, especially since I'm trying to think of any character that they introduce that's new. I think that they killed everyone that's introduced.
Yeah. So I mean,
so the thing is that there's no character to follow. There's no, like, there's no fan culture that can kind of go around around anything. I mean, obviously,
well, that's true, and it isn't, because of course what you're going to see is, well, you're going to see them popping up on Rebels. You're going to see you know, Cassian will get his own comic book, which are all ostensibly canon, and so at some point you can then reference back to events in that and blah 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 blah. So I you know, the Star Wars fan culture is interesting. Like, I actually really, I like dealing with those people for the most part, because they're so much less miserable than most of the fucking people that I deal with.
Yeah. No, I definitely get that. I mean,
and so like, to me, like, I don't begrudge anybody being like, oh man, this movie's fucking fantastic the day that, or the week that it comes out.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that we'll see how it holds up, because if you look back at the news reports from 1999, people coming out of the movie theater when episode one came out were like, oh my God, this is a life-changing event, and this is a great movie, and it's going to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that movie is a punchline for 75, 80% of the fan base.
Yeah, yeah.
So. But I don't think that this movie will ever be like that, because, again, I think that, like, just from a – from a technical perspective, I feel like the film is well put together.
Almost certainly, yeah. It's such a better. I mean, they've been playing the prequels on kind of loop on, I forget which channel it was, and I've been watching them. It's just like, wow, they just are like bad on almost every level. Like, shockingly bad filmmaking.
Yeah.
You know, even however you feel about George Lucas, he at least was a competent filmmaker, you know, from
American,
everything, you know. And those films, you just go, I don't know what happened. Like, where are they? Like, you wrote it with a joke for a guy and Kevin Smith joke, wasn't it? It was like, what, he just wrote it over a weekend and then, you know, pretended that, you know, I mean, like, that's how those films come off, you know, and.
In the Clerks cartoon,
yeah.
Oh, God, I think there's an element of truth to that. Yeah, it was from the Clerks cartoon when they're putting him on trial.
Oh, yeah.
Randall's like lobbing all those things at him, and one of them was, "Isn't it true that you wrote these over a weekend and kept telling everybody they've been done for years?"
Yeah. Damn it. Should have asked. Should have tried to gotten Kevin as a guest on this episode.
I know that's my that'll be the brass ring for this podcast is if we can eventually get Kevin Smith to come on and because like so many people who worked at our video shop were obsessed with Kevin Smith at that time. Oh. And like, you know, even to the extent that like now I still really dig his stuff and I like him as a personality and all that, but I'm not like Kevin Smith doesn't like define my entire like film experience the way that he did when we were 20.
Yeah, well,
two or whatever
for most people. So
well, yeah.
I did see Yoga Hosers and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I usually don't enjoy those kind of like, you know,
gross out comedy,
horror type films. I just don't usually like, I'm not a huge sci-fi, you know, as in the channel films, you know, Sharknado never really got anything for me. And that's very much along those lines of like ridiculousness. I loved it, you know, but. And Kevin's daughter is a much better actress than Johnny Depp's daughter. So at least in my opinion.
True. Yeah. I will say because we're talking about Kevin Smith and in the time since the last time we actually fucking recorded a podcast, I got to watch him direct.
That's true.
Which you already know, but anybody listening to this wouldn't. Because I haven't bragged about that nearly as much as you would think. Like, I like mentioned it on Twitter the day of, and Kevin Smith retweeted me, and I'm like, okay, my job's done.
Yeah, I got the retweet. Yeah,
but yeah, that is, like when I went, I did a set visit because I, you know, for anybody, I guarantee there's nobody listening to this who does not know what I do for a living. But just on the off chance that at some point somebody's listening to this who doesn't know who we are. Beyond people who used to work at a video store. You know, I'm a staff writer for comicbook.com and I cover primarily television and comic books. I do very little feature film coverage anymore. But I went on a set visit to basically everything that the CW makes, like, because they shoot everything in the same couple of lots, instead of doing like a set visit here and a set visit there over the course of the year, they save money and aggravation and all kinds of stuff by bringing us down there for like a week and having us just plow through 10 set visits in 8 days.
Yeah.
And so I was visiting a whole bunch of different TV shows that I cover for work. And one of them is Supergirl. And at the time, Kevin Smith was there. He was directing Supergirl Lives, which is the name of his episode, which is, if you know, it was named for Superman Lives, which is the name of the script that Kevin Smith wrote in 1999 that never got made for the Tim Burton, Nicolas Cage Superman movie. And then later on, Tim Burton said publicly that he would never read anything written by Kevin Smith, and led to all kinds of jokes, because you're like, wait.
Yeah.
What a script for your movie.
I love the idea, by the way, that there's an alternative universe somewhere where that film was made.
Yeah.
Like, there's a, you know, whatever, some bizarro universe where that...
It was the standard setter for making Macaulay Brooks James Olsen, because in that movie, Jimmy Olsen was going to be Chris Rock.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was going to be Nicolas Cage as Superman. Chris Rock was going to be Jimmy Olsen. And Lois Lane was going to be Cameron Diaz.
That literally, the year that film would have come out, that literally would be the most thing of that year. Like, what was it, 90?
Oh, yeah.
96?
Yeah, well, 99 was when I read the script.
Oh, okay.
Probably it was 97
when
he wrote it. Yeah, I downloaded it off, like, Drew's Scriptorama at one point. That's how I read it.
Yeah. It's literally, like, yeah. It's literally the most mid-90s film ever made in the history of time. It would have been that, with especially Tim Burton and Kevin Smith.
Tim Burton, Kevin Smith, that cast, a giant robot spider, some polar bears. You don't know what I'm talking about, you gotta check out the An Evening with Kevin Smith stand-up comedy special. Oh, yeah. You can get it on digital platforms. But Kevin Smith has a great, like, 40-minute rant about the reason that movie didn't get made, or one of the many reasons that movie didn't get made. But yeah, so anyway, when I was up in Vancouver and I was there for Supergirl Lives, Smith couldn't do an interview with us because they were behind schedule on filming. But what he did do, which is not entirely unheard of, but super uncommon and not something that we ever do on these set visits, is he brought all of us into Catco. And we basically stood in somebody's cubby and
cubicle.
The canvas walls, cubicle. Yeah, we stood in somebody's cubicle out of the shot of the camera and watched them shoot a couple of scenes with, like, Kara and James Olsen and Snapper Carr. And so that was a ton of fun, like, getting to watch Kevin Smith work and talking to people on set about how weird his directing style is. And, like, they all dug it, but it was, like, he had, like, music playing in Video Village. So that, like, whenever they weren't rolling, Video Village was not quiet. It was constantly playing, like, you know, 80s pop power ballads to get people's energy up. And, you know, just Kevin Smith running around, like, shouting encouragement at people at the top of his lungs pretty much nonstop.
That's awesome.
So that was pretty cool. And as we're wrapping up this tangent-laden episode of the Emerald City Video Podcast, and as we're talking about Kevin Smith, I felt that it was worth mentioning for anybody who's listening who did not know.
I would say so, yes. If you've made it this far, it's which is every single episode we've ever done. The 5 for 5 that the premise originally was, we'll just spend like 2 minutes on each film. We have yet to do one that's under like 45 minutes. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But anyway.
But that's also pretty much indicative of how it was at Emerald City Video when people would come in and we would just talk at them for an hour.
So, yeah, yeah.
Speaking of which, two of the people that have recently liked the podcasts Facebook page, and so hopefully we'll be listening to this and haven't. Hopefully they will have gone back and listened to something previous anyway. But if they haven't, this will be their first episode. Steve Alexander, who used to work with us at Emerald City Video, I don't know if he ever worked with you or not. He worked there before I worked there because I remember standing around talking to him about Kevin Smith, like when I was a customer and he was behind the counter. And that's what made me think of it. And then there's another woman, I cannot for the life of me remember her name, but she, A, used to work with us. Casey Duggan. And she, A, used to work with us at Emerald City Video, and B, apparently still, or at least very recently, continues to work with Jim Loperfido, the former owner of Emerald City Video. Because, like, I got the notification that she had liked the Facebook page. I was like, oh, that name sounds really fucking familiar. So I like clicked on it to see if I knew her. And there was a picture of her and Jim, like in the top two images on her Facebook thing on her wall. I was like, holy shit. Like, I remember this girl. And also, holy shit. Like, apparently she's still working with the Loperfidos 15 years later. Yeah. So apparently, welcome to yet more Emerald City Video coworkers. Very much like that Wizard the Comics magazine panel that we had at New York Comic Con. We pretty much are just preaching to our own people in this podcast. So
there's enough employees over the years. So
Exactly. And actually, I should ask them if they want to be added to our contributors Facebook group so that eventually somebody besides you and me can be on this show. Because unfortunately, it's just like, it's super, super hard to try and get anybody to commit to anything time-wise.
Yeah.
And part of it is that you know, you were gone for the election. And during that time, like, I basically just shut down operations because it's just like, well, if Zach's not around, nobody's going to answer my calls. And so it's not, at this point, it's not even fair. Like, I'm not even giving people a chance, but it's just because, like, we've tried and failed so many times that I'm like, okay, every now and again, I'm going to get the energy to put one together.
Well, anyway, on that note, let's close up this episode before we continue to keep talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Talking about nothing to do with it so that it's, you know,
nothing
enough. Burden bandwidth.
Yeah, yeah.
For other people. But yeah. So
yeah. So
summary: we both liked it.
Gary Whitta is. Pardon?
Yeah, I said.
We both liked it. Gary, we both liked it. Neither of us loved it. Or you know, at least I didn't love it. I thought it was good, not great. Yeah. It's a weird movie because I actually have another friend who really kind of didn't dislike it, but he was very let down by it. Yeah. And I was kind of like, he was posting on Facebook about how, like, everybody was upset with him for not liking it an appropriate amount. And I was like, well, I kind of feel like I like it an appropriate amount, and my amount is much lower than most people. So I think you're good. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll close up. Thank you all for listening for whoever's still listening to this, to the Emerald City Video Podcast. And like I said, check back next week. We're going to do a year in review kind of thing.
It promises to be much longer.
All right. Have a good night. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have to like set up a bell someplace that just goes off. Yeah.
We're just breaking it into like, we'll talk about like January through March, do it in quarters.
Yeah.
Just be like, well, in January, this film came out and it was terrible because 2016. Yeah, man. Anyway.
Yeah. There's like eight movies that were good.
Yeah.
So, all right. Have a good night.
Stay tuned. Good night.